RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. It's Beans. So
back in the saddle again.
How was your weekend? We just had a little talk about it, but nobody knows that yet.
It was all right. It really was. It's what I needed. Just good sights, good sounds, good smells.
Yes. Yeah. The nice crisp fall air.
Yeah. And when I say this, good sounds, it's usually the sound of absolute insulated
silence. You know what? Last week, I think it was one night, I've been dying to go night swimming because I just want to lay and look at the stars because the stars are so magnificent here. And I was laying in the pool and I was floating on my back and you could have heard a pin drop. It was just the most magical, quiet silence. Could have heard a pin drop.
The pin dropping.
It's beautiful.
Oh, it is. It really is. It's a gorgeous time. And yeah, I can't imagine what it's like when it's snowing up there, because you know there's a whole nother level of quiet.
Oh, yes.
When that happens and those clouds roll in and then you just get the, I don't know.
Yeah, you get the ground cover and it insulates things. I love the quiet of snowstorms.
You know what's crazy, though? I don't see any wildlife anytime I go up there. I always feel like I'm going to be smack dab in the middle of like Bambi or something, and there's just everybody is just there's all the creatures of the forest are going to come out, and you're going to just see them prancing around and doing their thing. I barely even hear birds when I'm up there. It's weird. It's really? Like an M. Night Shyamalan film or something. It's all weird.
We have Representative Stephen Toth on the program with us today, Frank.
And it was good. It really was.
Yeah, really, really good. Don't miss it. Absolutely don't miss it. Fantastic guy. Just always on top of things there in Texas. And are you stunned to learn that the people there aren't really on top of things?
No, I'm not. Because I generally look at Texas as one of those states that everybody takes for granted. And it just thinks, oh, it's Texas. Always going to be red. And the more that we go through time, The more we go through these years and these election cycles and stuff like that, and people keep talking about demographics, I really don't believe it. The whole demographic shift is, you know, especially when they talk about ethnic demographics with Hispanics and all that. But we're seeing Hispanics are more and more conservative than people ever had seen. Anybody who comes here or has been here for generations and has made something of themselves, who has family values and anything like that, knows that what's going on around them is not beneficial to them as individuals, as a family, as communities. So it's really just about where in these big red states that everybody takes for granted, can this creeping level of fraud even be held at bay for long enough to preserve whatever kind of political, you know, hegemony that there is there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, How much of Virginia is Virginia real? I know that it's trending just because of the how big government is, and people who work in D.C. go and live usually right there in Virginia. But man, oh man, has that not been affected in some way or in many ways by the kind of schemes that are being run at the southern border, and which ties into everything else? So much.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even know where to begin. I will tell you, though, the culture's coming back, Frank. Top of the iTunes charts. Did you hear the song?
No.
Top of the iTunes charts, selling, you know, going viral, absolutely viral, especially on TikTok. Everybody's using this sound as their background. It's Not Safe for Work, but, you know, we should definitely listen to it here on the show because it's a great, great little jingle.
Let's go, Brandon. Hey. Let's go, Brandon.
Hey.
Let's go.
Hey.
Yeah.
You know what they're saying, ho?
So I want to play it only because there is a verse in here, which is pretty interesting to listen to. Here we go.
And I say it with a passion as I pull off in the Aston. Don't nobody like his ass, huh? Tried to cover up and tell the people, go Brandon. But we know what they saying, though. You can hear the chant in every post. Don't nobody want this commie cause we not in China. Everybody hated Trump and now they out to catch a body. That's what they get for treating us like we in Squid Games. Green light mandate like he's insane. These times people waking up to everything. Go Brandon, but we all know what the saying means.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a red hat that says make music great again.
It's been good. It's been good to see this stuff happen.
Absolutely.
Really has been. But, you know, it does fall in the same category as talking that big game. And when are we going to get our retribution? What are we going to see people pay the price for committing crimes? It's good. It's good to keep people's hearts and minds invigorated. But when's the dam going to break?
By the way.
Yeah.
Lena Wen, our favorite.
Yeah.
Our favorite woman that we talk about all the time. She wrote an op-ed, but I have to play this for you, Frank. I'm not even going to say anything. Just listen.
To me, this is not a scientific question. This is a value judgment. As in, people like Dr. Offit, and I'm sure there are many Americans, would say, hey, as long as I don't get very sick and don't end up in the hospital from COVID, I'm fine. I may not need to get a booster dose. But there are plenty of other people, and I am in that second camp, who would say, I don't want to get COVID at all. There's the potential for wall hall symptoms. Also, if I get ill, even if I'm not hospitalized, I have young kids. I don't want to transmit COVID to them. Also, I don't want to be out of commission and unable to work and unable to care for my children. There are a lot of us who want to get a booster for that reason. I do not think that it's the role of the federal government and our federal health officials to be telling Americans how we should value our lives and our ability to get ill or prevent sickness. The role of our federal government should be to say, are these vaccines safe and effective? Is a booster safe and effective? If it is, then allow Americans to make that decision for themselves.
What the hell is going on? Here we go. Let's listen to this.
Vaccine mandate for anyone over the age of 12 traveling on a plane or a train. I mean, we've spoken about this idea before. I wonder what's a better strategy, playing to someone's fear using that kind of marketing campaign we just showed, or making the vaccine a requirement for more things like traveling. Should the U.S. be more like Canada?
Yes, we should. We really need every tool at our disposal at this point. We've already tried incentives, we tried outreach and education. We should continue doing that. But at this point, vaccine requirements are the way to go. Vaccine requirements in workplaces, as we've seen, have been very effective.
Yeah, no, it's been very effective at getting people to lose their jobs.
What happened?
It's been very...
What happened?
What happened has been happening for a very long time.
I know, but what happened that made her completely change her tune like that? You know she's an automaton. What happened?
I don't know. It sounded like to me that she was... I don't know.
Something is weird. Less than 3 weeks ago, we were talking about how she was basically saying, go to the gulag if you don't get your shot. You shouldn't have any rights. It's a luxury for you to drive and cross state lines and travel and blah, 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 blah. Now she's saying it really should not be the government's decision. It should be your own personal choice.
Well, the way I took that, unless I missed something, I have to listen to it again, was that it was almost like a reverse psychology thing. That's what I thought that she was saying. You got to go get these shots, but you should want to. You should want them for yourself.
Can we listen again?
Let's listen again because I want to make sure I got this right.
Well, yeah, I need to play it for you again. Here we go.
To me, this is not a scientific question. This is a value judgment. As in, people like Dr. Offit, and I'm sure there are many Americans, would say, hey, as long as I don't get very sick and don't end up in the hospital from COVID, I'm fine. I may not need to get a booster dose. But there are plenty of other people, and I am in that second camp, who would say, I don't want to get COVID at all. There's the potential for wall hall symptoms. Also, if I get ill, even if I'm not hospitalized, I have young kids. I don't want to transmit COVID to them. Also, I don't want to be out of commission and unable to work and unable to care for my children. There are a lot of us who want to get a booster for that reason. I do not think that it's the role of the federal government and our federal health officials to be telling Americans how we should value our lives and our ability to get ill or prevent sickness. The role of our federal government should be to say, are these vaccines safe and effective? Is a booster safe and effective? If it is, then allow Americans to make that decision for themselves.
It's very confusing. It's very confusing. I don't know. It does sound like it almost, I don't know. Maybe because they have to know internal polling. They have to know how their polling is. They have to know how people are receiving them, especially when someone like her goes on to television. Every time it's shared on the internet, it's destroyed. They have to know that they've been overstepping their bounds by saying you should not be able to see family if you don't get these shots, and then maybe moderate in some way. There has to be a part of it. But I don't. It's so confusing.
I don't know. It's very weird to me. It really is very, very weird. So I just was following that, making sure that we stay on top of it. We've got BLM and conservative activists here in front of the New York Times. Defund the media.
Mm-hmm.
Defund the media.
And how?
Yeah.
And how?
Yeah, except me. You can fund Uncover DC by going to uncoverdc.com/support.
Do it.
Fund me.
You must do it.
And then there's this other stuff going around in the UK, Frank. The four signs that you're super cold may have developed into deadly pneumonia.
Wait, what's a super cold now?
Wait, what? Yes, so there's a lot of people. I will say that they're all vaccinated so far that I've seen. This is anecdotal. Well, yeah, I mean, he just passed away, yeah. But these people are getting a cold, okay? It will not go away. It is a brutal, horrible cold. It is not COVID. It won't go away, and they're all developing pneumonia from it. So now people are looking around like, what the hell is this? It's a big thing. It's a thing. It really is.
Oh, boy. So okay. So I have to keep an eye out for super cold now.
Super cold.
It doesn't go away.
Super cold that doesn't go away. Weeks.
So how does a super cold become a flu? Because a flu was just an annoying. I thought that was just like the next step up from cold, and that stuck around for a week, maybe two.
Well, I don't know what they're saying flu season and everybody's been inside and now they're outside. But all of these people are vaccinated. I think they have like a 80 or 90% vaccination rate in the UK now. And they're running around with this. This is just, I'm just going to throw it out there. After every single COVID coronavirus vaccine in animal testing, reintroduction of coronavirus to those people or animals that were vaccinated has caused ADE or more severe response to coronavirus afterwards. So what people are grumbling about is that this is what's happening here. Somebody's getting a regular cold that's been vaccinated and their body can't fight it off because of ADE or something to that effect. And so now they're getting super duper sick.
And good luck proving it.
Right.
And that's really what it all comes down to. Good luck proving it.
Well, yeah, none of this stuff will ever be proven, especially when they don't want to prove it, right? I mean, they have no desire. This is why they've been pushing so hard to get everybody vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want their control group around. And now, I think that I honestly feel like it's dead in the water, Frank. I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. I keep on saying, though, we can't. Patriot Czar in the Dark to Light Telegram room says something very genius yesterday that I've been thinking for a very long time. We can't allow them to go 10 steps forward, four steps back, right? So Delta Airlines, you must get the vaccine or you're fired. Everybody goes out and gets the vaccine. They move four steps back. We can't mandate our employees to get vaccines. The response has been overwhelming. Nobody likes this. So instead, we're going to fine you $200 a month and make you submit to like every other day testing.
Yeah.
Then that becomes the normal. Oh, okay. Thanks for not making me get the vaccine. You'll just fine me and test me all the time. Same thing with this natural immunity nonsense that's going on now, where the argument to not vaccinate is based on natural immunity instead of based on, I don't want to shoot this crap in my body. I don't care if I've had COVID or not.
Right.
So don't fall for it. They do it all the time.
It's a great point. It's a great point. It's that, what do they call it? I forget it. Either way, it's just a very concise way of describing the cutting and bulking cycle, where you go those 10 steps forward, knowing you're not going to be able to keep all 10.
Yeah.
You get pushed back about 5 or 6, and you're left with a starting point now that is 4 ahead of where you were.
Yes.
And you just keep going. Crisis and Leviathan, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's what it's called.
Because they still are able to move where they want to go. Maria Bartiromo.
But first this morning, this exclusive, sources tell Sunday Morning Futures, there is speculation swirling in Washington that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi may step down after getting the massive spending package through. So all of those Democrat members who had their arms twisted to vote on the multi-trillion-dollar package and put their own reelection in jeopardy may be fuming to learn that the speaker could be planning a cut and run.
Now, that's interesting to me for several different reasons. First of all, I'm going to almost bet it's true. Because Maria does
why
not...
Why do you think?
Have you seen her lately?
Oh, but they're all in really, really bad shape. But why not let somebody else? Why not let somebody else take the lead on that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
But who's going to take her place? Pick another speaker. Who's it going to be? Can they pick Sinema or Manchin?
No.
They're in the Senate anyway.
They've gotten. They also have less people. Supporting them.
Well, I know.
But I'm just saying, Sinema is actually am more confident in Sinema having some kind of integrity than many Republicans.
Me too. Balls.
Oh, yeah. Think of the bravery it takes to say no, even if it's something that is really not, if we don't think it's the most devastating thing that we're facing right now. The fact that she has the courage to say no to the rest of her party and not budge, that's brave on anything. It doesn't matter.
In the beginning, most people would cave, like you're saying. In the beginning, we were all like, oh my God, she's horrible, she's horrible, she's horrible. And she is. She's still not a conservative, obviously, but she knows her constituency and she has supported things that we support many times since she's been elected.
Now that she's been harassed in a bathroom, I'm sure that she knows just a little bit more about maybe in private, but she knows a little bit more about what really is driving this.
Additionally, she was one of the only ones who didn't fall in line with the whole what was it? It was the outfit choice or the standing, or she clapped and she wasn't supposed to in the first State of the Union address she was in.
Yep.
And I was like, And seriously, I don't know why she's pushing. I should be more informed about this before I talk about it. But why is she pushing against this? Does she want more or something of less or less of something? Do you know?
That's good. I don't know.
I doubt it's more because they'd never yell at her for that.
No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't.
I mean, Manchin, in Manchin's case, he's so anti-entitlement that, you know, this bill is so disgusting. It better not pass. I mean, it's a train wreck.
Well, I mean, what do we have left?
Nothing.
Three. When you're in the territory of spending bills that are tickling the chin of $4 trillion. Wowie.
Yeah.
That's not even a real number. They're literally making up numbers.
I know, and that coin comes into play a little bit more, in my opinion. Back to virus stuff. I know I jumped around a little bit, but did you hear this clip here?
What is sitting in all these containers behind us?
Everything.
Longshoremen telling me some of these containers have been sitting here for 6 months with a shortage of truck drivers to get the goods on the highway and into stores. It's not just making things harder to find, it's making them more expensive.
Today we face an economy that's in transition. And as part of that transition, we are seeing high prices for some of the things that people have to buy. But the reality is that the only way we're going to get to a place where we work through this transition is if everyone in America and everyone around the world gets vaccinated. Oh. That's why the president continues to be focused on the idea that we get everyone who can vaccinated in this country.
So what are they saying there on how?
So the supply issues are because they're holding us hostage?
Exactly what it is. I mean, there's no other reason. And it's not just that... It's not just the fact that they're deliberately making things hard for people at the ports on the West Coast, but I've even had a friend of mine from California say that there is also these little environmental mandates with the trucks.
Yep.
That they're starting to make it harder for truck drivers and for shipping companies to go and pick up these shipments if they're using trucks that are older than 2009. Because of some kind of efficiency, something, I don't know, emissions efficiency and whatever. So they're not only making it hard for shippers to get stuff into the country from the outside in these ports, they're making it hard for truckers to get up to the ports and do their job. And then, of course, we know that this is really just about how long can we hold people hostage and stuff? It's like it's laying siege. You know, you go and you watch Braveheart or you watch Game of Thrones or anything that takes part in that kind of a period. You lay siege to a city. You just encircle the entire city. You make sure nobody leaves and nobody arrives, and you just sit there until finally they start dying because they're starving and there's sickness and all that stuff, and you just wait them out. If you're the greater force, that's exactly what they're looking at the entire world at right now. They built up gigantic corporate interests for years, and now they're all united on one global political front and asserting their will to make sure that everybody is messed up. And even if they don't have control over everything, if they control most of the shipping, then it's hard for people who are willing to get food out to Americans or Australians or anywhere else, because they don't have the supplies, or there's a middleman right now that they don't control. It's messed up.
It's a mix of progressive ideology, all showing how absolutely terrible it is, laced with totalitarianism.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, because most people, and you want to talk about those who are really just mindless and they go along with the BS, say, oh, well, the supply lines are strained. Why? Because of the virus. Oh, yeah, how did the virus, what is it, everybody's afraid to ship things? Well, how did the virus disrupt the supply lines?
The shipping is not a problem. I mean, there are people see the pictures. There's no shipping problem. They're all just lined up there. All these pallets and pallets and pallets and pallets of stuff. Pallets. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I don't know. The last thing I wanted to talk with you about today, too, is the Dave Chappelle special. Have you watched it?
I watched most of it, and even though I'm about halfway through it right now, I think that I've already seen the best parts in clips.
Okay. So here's the thing. It was funny. I laughed. He made fun of Mike Pence. It was hysterical. He skirted around the edges of his, you know, trans stuff, and he said some things that were really true and made me chuckle. But he kept calling himself transphobic in quotes, which I think is ridiculous because that means that you're scared of trans people. It doesn't mean that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're scared of them. I thought, and I think this might be an unpopular opinion, but I'm going to share it anyway. I thought he pandered. The whole second half, maybe a little bit less, was a really, really touching story. But it was about how he met this trans comedian in San Francisco who we became friends with, and he let open for him. And he goes into how good friends they became, and they were close to one another, and, you know, he gave her her first shot and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And then when everybody came for him after the last special, this trans woman stood up for him, took a whole bunch of crap from the trans community to the point where, like, she killed herself over it. And he established a trust fund in the daughter's name and is going to give it to her when she turns 21. And he said, he's like, I can't wait to go up to her and say, you know, your dad was a great woman. That was how it ended. But he like basically spent a half an hour talking about how he has trans friends and that he's not transphobic. How could he be transphobic? He didn't say it like that, but it just seemed like he sold out and pandered. Like, that's a great story and all, but the way he framed it was just, meh, I don't know.
No, I don't say. I think he has the power to make anybody laugh, and it's really it's something else. But my criticism, at least for the last few specials especially, has been he only ever goes 50% of the way.
Yeah.
Then I know he says, oh, we're going all in, we're going there tonight.
Yeah, it was nothing.
Yeah,
it was.
Well, you're not really, you know, you really didn't. And I knew that there's only so far that he could go. Maybe, I don't know when the hell this one came out. It was maybe three of them ago. It might have been the first time he did it might have been the first one after Trump got elected. And he did that Q&A at the end of the stand-up routine. And he's answering questions and just having a conversation, open conversation with the audience. And he goes into Frederick Douglass, and he's obviously has not understood Frederick Douglass. So when I'm listening to him talk about how he's reading about Frederick Douglass, it's either he is not really able to see exactly what Frederick Douglass was saying back then, who he was, or he's reading books on Frederick Douglass by leftist radicals who are doing all the interpreting for him.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, he's not going, it's then we can't go this far. It's great that you're pro free speech. It's great that you have acknowledged that LGBT Incorporated is a militant political movement, and it doesn't have anything to do with serving the interests of gay people. And
it's funny because he said the one funny thing that he said that I thought was really great. I don't know if you've heard this clip where he was like, DaBaby, the rapper, he goes into how he took a lot of heat for saying something about gay people at his last show, and they canceled him and all kinds of crap. And then he was saying, this man killed someone in a Walmart and still had no problems with his career.
Yep.
But he makes a comment about gay people. He's like, the LGBTQ community is the most powerful. Why are you always crapping all over us? I mean, the black people worked for decades to try and get to where you've gotten in less than 15 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's when I see that, I ask myself, is he being rhetorical? Because he obviously has the balls to say whatever he wants. So is he being veiled about who's controlling either movements and who's allowing something to be more successful than the others and more pervasive in society than the other? Or is he, you know, how far are you going to go with this, Dave? You think the black movement is riddled with Marxist trash. That is, it is self-defeating. It's a self-defeating purpose. You will never be successful with it, ever. Ever, you will never be successful with it. On the other hand, whereas Marxist subversive trash is driving LGBT whatever as well, they have taken a different approach, and they have made it part of a part of a curriculum, and they just know that this is a, I don't know what exactly is the science between the two there, but one is obviously a lot more potent of a political force than the other. Maybe because black people have a much higher rate. First of all, there are a much higher rate of coming to grips with what's actually happening to them.
Yeah.
And there's so much going on still with especially transgender politics that is so new a phenomenon. It doesn't have generations of pandering and welfare peddling that has done nothing but the opposite of what it intended to do for black people. So I don't know. And that's, it's part of the reason why that I sit there, and for the most part with Chappelle, I sit there and I watch amused with a smirk on. Sometimes I laugh out loud a little bit, but he doesn't go far enough for me. It's not a matter about how shocking you can be with your punchlines. It's about, you know, what points are you making, you know? And
I miss being able to laugh out loud at a comedian the way I used to with like George Carlin or like Dana Carvey, even. I mean, I used to barrel, like belly laugh at these guys, but I can't do that anymore. There's just, oh, the only guy that makes me do that still is Sebastian Maniscalco.
Yeah, he's good.
He's hysterical. He's funny.
He's good for sure.
Anyway, so without further ado, let's show everybody our interview with Representative Stephen Toth. Amazing guy.
Do it.
Don't miss it, guys. So welcoming back to the program, Representative Steve Toth from Texas. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Great to be with you guys.
You have done some absolutely stellar things. Like if I lived in Texas and you were my representative, I'd be at your office every day with flowers.
Absolutely.
Flowers and candy.
Candy, there you go.
You know, anything to make you keep doing what you're doing. So we'll talk first about this new bill that you brought forth. And I believe you guys are in special session, right?
We are. One more day.
Okay. So you brought forth a bill to basically hire any of the military that had been dishonorably discharged because of the vaccine mandate. Can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in where God guides, God provides. And Texas has an excess amount of money right now. We have an excessive problem, crisis, down on our southern border. And we have the opportunity to have all these military people that are being forced out of the army right now that have served honorably, have fought for their country, have worn the flag with distinction and honor, and now they're being forced out, come to Texas. We should take the money that we have right now and we should put these guys down on the border. It's absolutely the smartest thing to do.
I just have to say, typically government doesn't think like a small businessman or business
entrepreneur. That's because we hire attorneys. We hire lawyers that have never had a job, that have never learned how to think critically, that have never learned how to problem solve.
So you come in with your experience in the private sector and a brain, and you get so creative with this. What has the response been from folks out there?
Everyone loves it. Everyone loves this idea except House leadership and Senate leadership.
Why is that?
I don't know. I can't get into the mind of politicians. Why this just doesn't make perfect sense. Tracy, can't understand it.
So you have Greg Abbott, who basically said nobody's mandating a vaccine here, and we can debate whether or not he actually is sincere about this or if it's just, you know, sort of an election year ploy. I don't know. But this is what he said. And so it baffles my mind that anybody would be like, no. What has to happen for this to pass?
It needs for him to put it on the call. And initially when I spoke with one of his people about it, they said, They said combat troops on the border? Can you believe? Can you imagine the optics of that? And I said, well, yeah, I can. I think the optics are pretty darn great because people see this as an invasion right now, as the United States federal government is allowing all these people into our country that are infected with COVID, and as well as the fact that there are a ton of people. Tracy, what happens is they overwhelm the Del Rio border. They overwhelm the Rio Grande border area. And then meanwhile, in other areas, that's where the drugs are coming across without any trouble because we're overwhelmed. That's where the human trafficking is coming across. That's where little girls, 8-year-old girls, 16-year-old girls are brought over is human cargo to work in the sex trade industry here in the United States. And no one gives a damn about these little girls.
It's terrible.
You know, we're just all so consumed with being politically correct and wanting to do whatever Joe Biden wants to do.
Is it really Joe Biden at this point? I don't know who's
Good question. good question. Yes, I know. What a stupid thing for me to say, Joe Biden. I mean, the guy can't figure out how to tie his shoes in the morning.
Let alone, just to make policy decisions. I mean, you know, what another question for you? It's a little off topic, but I'm interested to get your thoughts on this. You know, we're seeing this whole supply chain thing and what's going on over in California. And what's actually happening from research is their environmental controls are stopping most truckers from being able to own or operate from California. Why hasn't Texas, in your opinion, opened up its ports for some of those leftover ships the way that DeSantis has said?
That's a really great question. And I honestly don't know. I mean, I take my hat off to DeSantis. He's been so aggressive in the midst of everything that this administration has thrown at us, and he's doing a great job. And so I can't tell you.
I think, you know, Texas has been kind of right there with Florida in terms of its steadfastness for individual liberty. And you're a part of that. Can we move into the election integrity conversation for a second?
Love to, please.
So you've done a lot of really good work on this, and you're very, very, very well educated and informed. And I know that your focus is typically paper, because that's where the left really gets their claws in. So what's going on with that bill that you advanced back in the day? I know that there are audits going on in Texas, or there should be. Tell us about that.
My focus is where the fraud is taking place. And I have no doubt that there's electronic fraud. I'm just simply saying that based on what I've seen out of Maricopa County, based on what I've seen out of Pima County, based on what I've seen out of Texas, the vast majority of this, the vast overwhelming amount of majority of fraud is happening through paper. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. Anybody with a copier, anyone that has access to a copy machine, can print a paper ballot and fraudulently put out another paper ballot. And that's where the fraud is taking place. If you look at Pima County, and I think it's Pima,
yep,
in Arizona, they had like five, I'm not kidding, they had like five to 10 precincts where they had 101% return of paper ballots. That doesn't happen. That's impossible. That's just impossible. And so, yeah, that's where the vast majority of it's taking place. It's that and the voter rolls. And it's all you have to do with a Republican to put them in their place is just accuse them of being paranoid. Accuse them of being, you know, one of these people that's a flat earther for thinking that there actually was voter fraud. There's been voter fraud in this country for years and years and years. We just passed one of the most sweeping integrity reform bills in the United States. Why? Because there was voter fraud. Okay, so we know there's voter fraud. Let's find out where it was.
Well, I mean, you know, what is going on in... We were at a point when we last spoke that it was kind of at the wire. What's happened since with that? Has it passed? Has it stalled? Are they actually doing anything? Or are they just paying lip service?
We're not doing anything. We're not doing anything. We're supposedly doing a risk limiting audit, which is
nothing.
Nothing. I'm so completely disappointed. And you look at all these groups across the state of Texas that are independently challenging the voter rolls, and we're finding, you know, places in Dallas where there are 500 people that live in a parking lot, these other places where there are 200-300 people at a homeless shelter that are voting that are not there, hundreds and hundreds of places that where people are voting from empty stores, retail shops that don't exist. It's out there. It's going on everywhere. And it's frustrating for me because these people keep coming to me with this evidence showing pictures and these really nice PowerPoint presentations they put together, and, you know, where 30 or 40 people have come together and they've gotten their friends to make phone calls and drive out and take pictures. It's going on. It's rampant in Texas. And we're going to lose this state. This state will turn blue if Republicans don't wake up and get active.
So what's the problem? Here's the thing. I'm in South Carolina. I experienced the same crap here. Oh, no. You know, we won. You know, okay, maybe this time. But if you think for a second that this stuff isn't going, why are they so spineless? Can you answer that question? Like, you're obviously not. When you talk to your colleagues, what are they saying?
I'm telling you, all you have to do is accuse them of being paranoid, accuse them of being a radical person on the right, a radical conservative, conspiratorialist. And that's all it does. That's all it takes to put a Republican in his place, to scare him into his little corner so that he's just too sheepish and scared to say anything. Oh, there's no voter fraud in Tarrant County. Oh, there's no voter fraud in Harris County. And the cool thing is I've gotten support from every Harris County Republican. Every Harris County Republican signed on to my bill and wanted to be part of it, wanted the audit, because they all see it. It's so rampant down there. I mean, it's as plain as day. But I could not get anybody from Dallas and the surrounding area, Republican-wise, to help me with my legislation. Really sad.
And what happens now? Like, what is a constituent to think at this point? You know, how do we get across the hurdle of government inaction? Not for lack of trying, Representative, obviously. How do we get past that hurdle as citizens? Is there a solution? Do we have to just take over poll watching? Like, what do we have to do? Because there's an army of people out there ready to do it.
So one of the great things that came out of this legislation in session was that we have really strong voter integrity legislation in the state of Texas now. And so if you go into a blue or a Democrat precinct, the judge there, the elections judge there is going to be a Democrat. If you go into a red or a conservative Republican precinct, the election judge there is going to be a Republican. Poll watchers now are what balances that out in the state of Texas. So you are welcome as a Democrat to come into a Republican voting precinct and be an election observer there and make sure that everything, and you will be protected. No one will be able to mess with you. And that goes for the same thing for a Republican and Democrat area. You will be protected. No one can mess with you. But whether you're a Republican in a blue area or a Democrat in a red area, you are not allowed to talk with voters. You're not allowed to interfere with them. You're only allowed to observe and make sure that the rules are being followed. And that was the purpose of this law, because we had six counties across the United States, blue counties, where there was rampant fraud, and poll observers, Republicans, were tossed out. They were not, when they said, this is going on, it's wrong, it's against election code, they were thrown out. We're gonna stop that in the state of Texas. But that's not enough. It's not enough. The way the ballots are canvassed, the way elections with, digital elections, as well as the voter rolls, we've got to do a forensic audit and uncover what's going on.
Is there any provision in any of this integrity legislation that's passed to stop accepting outside private money and contractors to do?
Yes.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah, we stopped that. We called that the Zuckerbuck election.
Yep.
Integrity thing.
It's a good one.
And Harris County. What? I mean, this is the most egregious thing of all. We have election law. Article 1, Section 4 of the United States Constitution says the place, the time, and the method of voting is determined by the state legislature. So Zuckerbucks came in and they said to local municipalities, we want you to keep your polls open 24/7. And even though that's against the law, because there was so much money involved, they took the money. We want you to put drop boxes all over your city. That's against the law, but many of these areas did it anyways. We want you to do drive-through voting. And so even though we have curbside voting, drive-through voting basically violates every tenet of curbside voting because, you know, basically you would have buses coming in with people in them and, you know, elderly people from nursing homes, and you'd have people inside the bus telling them how to vote. It was terrible. So, but what we did was we set up some really harsh penalties, criminal penalties, felony penalties for municipalities if they take that money now. They can't anymore.
So that's good because municipalities typically will follow law like that. Individuals may not, right? They just kind of do what they want to do. My next thing is, let's pretend for a second you find fraud and you're in one of those Democrat precincts, but you're a Republican there. And the election judge is a Democrat. How is somebody going to make sure that that's investigated and that either those votes are thrown out or they're not counted? Because that's the stonewall I see. What's their remedy?
We still need to give Ken Paxton and his voter integrity unit more money. And I think he has less than a dozen attorneys for a state of 30 million people.
Wow.
And yeah, so I mean, honestly, tomorrow you could give him 100 attorneys and Ken would have his hands full. They have 510 investigations open right now. And the reality is that they could have 5,100 investigations open tomorrow if he had the attorneys to look into it. But first, again, hear no evil, see no evil. The House and the Senate don't seem all that concerned about it, unfortunately. And I don't want to blame the Senate because actually Dan Patrick has done a pretty darn good job. Dan, you know, he and Senator Betancourt did actually put some good legislation that they passed out of the Senate, sent over to the House, and the House did nothing with it to call for a forensic audit. So I take my hat off to the Lieutenant Governor for that.
Well, I mean, that's all fantastic. My biggest thing today is getting people in Texas loud. First of all, supporting people like you to make sure that you stay where you're at because we need to clone you. And secondly, to make sure that they're doing what they can to keep the pressure on these people because I feel like if their phone isn't ringing, they think that they're okay. And, you know, if people are quiet, they think that they're okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, too, in Texas, and it just left my brain and it was so important. Oh, the, you know what? It's Monday. I need more coffee. What was I going to say? Hold on. I'm pausing it real quick.
I'm trying to think for you. I don't know.
Bear with me. Okay. So we saw the Democrats get on a plane and basically camp out in D.C. maskless and full of COVID, right?
Right.
And then they come back and I saw pictures.
They actually had a COVID outbreak that the Texas Democrats brought.
I know. It's insane. I mean, it's just the hypocrisy is just.
And once they got there, no one wanted to meet with them. It was hysterical.
So they come back and I see the sergeant at arms at some of their offices. What is going to come of this? Is there any accountability ever?
No, of course not. Why would anyone hold them accountable for doing wrong?
I think that's
ultimately what makes me what always curbs my own enthusiasm about all this stuff. Obviously, it's great that there are people on local levels and state levels like Texas and Arizona and elsewhere that are doing the work that needs to be done, both just in awareness and legislatively and investigations, all that stuff. But what people are most disillusioned by is that whenever there is a really foul plot uncovered and we get all the details of it over a course of time, we've really been rooked of all of our faith that there is going to be accountability. That's the big...
That is it, exactly. We talk so tough about throwing them in jail. We talk so tough about arresting them and dragging their ass back to the Capitol. Excuse me, sorry.
That's fine.
But we never do it. We never do it.
And here, it has to be frustrating for you. Like, I can only imagine being someone like you who's so ridiculously proactive and so engaged with their constituency and so ready to take the hammer. And then you're just stonewalled by spineless rhinos, for lack of a better word, that won't move.
Yeah, my dad died in September. And I would have loved to have been with him for the last week of his life. But I couldn't, because I was waiting for these dumbasses to come back. I've missed, you know, nephews and nieces' weddings. I've missed being with my family. And these jerks come back to the Texas legislature, and then they accuse us of rushing redistricting through. They accuse us of rushing election integrity through. And we're like, you jerks were gone for 7 weeks on a political campaign in Washington, D.C., where you raised millions of dollars in campaign donations. And you're accusing us of rushing legislation through the process.
I'm sorry about your dad. That's horrible.
Very sorry.
What can we do to help you? Please tell us. We will do anything.
Just, you know, you guys keep doing what you're doing. We're not going to get any help from the mainstream media. I passed a bill out that bans critical race theory in the state of Texas this year. And, you know, you probably heard that a school district, I think it was in South Lake, where the teacher wanted to conflate and say, look, because of Toth's bill 3979, we have to teach an alternate side of the Holocaust, which is a complete lie.
Yes, I'm seeing
that. That is a total and complete lie. And yet the press continues to conflate it. There was an article that came out in Forbes yesterday that says, because of my legislation, you can't just teach the bad side of the Holocaust. You have to try and conflate that there was another side to the issue, that Hitler had some kind of, you know, ulterior motive for wanting to kill 6 million Jews. It's all total
say
BS.
Say it.
Yeah, I can't. I'm a recovering Baptist pastor. So, but that's not true. There's nothing in the bill. And so I talked to the guy yesterday. I'm like, nowhere in this bill does it say that you have to come at the Holocaust from a contending perspective and say that there was another side to it. Well, that's what we've been told. And like, why don't you pick up the darn bill and look at it? The way Texas, we don't use legalese in the way that we write our legislation. We want it to be plain spoken King's English.
Yep.
So that people can understand it. And it's very simple to understand. What my bill says is that current events, if there are current events, we're not expecting teachers to indoctrinate our children on the issues of current events. If you're going to talk about current events, do it from a diverse contending perspective that challenges children on how to think, as opposed to indoctrinating them. And that's all we're saying. It clearly says that you can talk about past historical events that are ugly and awful and painful, but current events, teachers have to do it from a diverse and contending perspective without showing deference.
Oh, so you mean like not taking a CNN or a Forbes article and using that to teach their class?
Exactly.
I see sun on the horizon, Representative, because here's why. BLM and conservatives are protesting together against vaccine mandates. And I think once we start waking people up to the fact that everything they've been told is a lie, and that's what we do here every single day, there's going to start to be a lot more unity. They're trying to keep it under wraps right now, but they can't. What's your website so that we can send people there so that they can keep on top of all the great stuff that you do?
Actually, we're redoing the website right now. Facebook is the best place to get a hold of me.
It's
Steve Toth for Texas, unfortunately. We're redoing the website right now. So until the website is finished, it's we're reconstructing it right now. So,
well, that's fantastic. I want to get you on Telegram. You need to be there.
Yes. I'm on Telegram, actually. I haven't put up a page yet.
Well, I'll talk to Miss Cassandra and I'll get her on that.
Get, Get Cassandra on that for us.
I will. And thank you so much for your time today and for everything that you're doing. Seriously, we do appreciate it, even if we don't live in the great state of Texas.
Indeed.
Come on, we need you. We need you. Get over here.
I got to keep saving South Carolina. We need these red states to stay.
Nah, get over here.
I'm the free agent. I'm the free agent over here. New York is screwed. So I have
Greg,
to go.
Are you from New York?
I'm here right now, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a refugee from upstate Rochester.
Oh, well, you know, listen, I just came from the Adirondacks yesterday just for a weekend away. And it's just, oh, man, when you're away from the armpit of New York, it really is a different country.
So are the trees ablaze right now in the Adirondacks?
Beautiful. It's just so gorgeous. It really is.
There is no more beautiful place in the whole world than the Adirondacks in the fall.
No, I know. It's wonderful. So I always feel bad. We always talk about different parts of the country and all the problems that they have. And what it really takes away is the real glory of the geography that is the nation, you know?
Wait, say that T-A-L-K one more time.
Talk.
Oh, talk.
Talk. We talk.
I know
talk.
It.
You worked at that time.
Look.
I knew what you were honing in on there.
I'm a New York native too. I grew up on Long Island, but I came here to South Carolina.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah,
there
Long is. Island, you know?
Long Island.
And yeah. I almost went to school in Rochester. So there you go, SUNY Rochester up there.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I ended up at Albany, but, you know.
All right.
Listen, you're amazing. We love you. I hope you'll come back very soon and talk
with
Tracy.
Us. Thanks, Tracy. Thanks, Frank. See you guys. God bless you.
God bless
Bye-bye.
You.
Thanks.
Bye. So what do you say, Frank?
I loved it. I'm glad he knows what time of day it is and he knows what he's up against, because it's not just about diagnosing the problem. It's about knowing that once you get the diagnosis and you have all of your evidence and you know what's going on, we have a bigger problem of follow through.
Yeah, and you know the thing I like the most is that you know he knows what the hell is up, right? He gets it. He knows the accountability line. He understands that. The fact that he's still so excited and glad that election integrity bill passed makes me think that it really is a very powerful bill and that it will be successful in Texas. Otherwise, he'd be like, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that. But anyway, you have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. Until Wednesday, when Frank, we will have Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Well, later.